Dr. John Duffy makes a return visit to the show.
Yeah, weren't you already on? I heard you when I was listening in the car.
Trying to sneak in an extra segment there.
There's nothing wrong with that. You get paid the same, though. You realize that. It's not by the word. We can't do it by the word like we used to.
Nobody mentioned this.
No, they changed the rules. Dr. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert.
Careful.
I almost swore.
Ship
but
hole.
I know. His book is called his best-selling book is called The Available Parent. Hi, John. Nice to see you again. You wanted to talk about teens from a slightly different standpoint as usual. Go ahead.
So one thing I've noticed in the last couple of months, and I've talked to a couple of colleagues about this, we're seeing the normal kind of teen anxiety that we've talked about here before, where you know they're very stressed from social stressors, family factors, academic factors, too much time on screen, stuff like this. What I've seen lately is this degree of hopelessness and disconnection that a lot of teens are reporting that they feel. And it's escalating to the point where some of them become super hopeless and have, if they're not overtly suicidal, they at the very least have some suicidal ideation. And that's kind of a quantum jump from where I was probably just 6 months ago. And so I've been thinking about like, well, what's the antidote to this? Because this seems like a big deal. And suddenly, instead of just saying we have stressed out teens, we have stressed out teens that may get into the position where they're hurting themselves, you know, and that becomes more alarming. And I'm seeing that more and more and more in the last, let's say, 4 or 5 months or so.
I was telling you off the air, my son's a freshman, my youngest, and he just felt like very blah. And he said, you know, I'm kind of feeling depressed, not suicidal, but I'm feeling kind of down. And I said, well, you know, you just had a nice little break. You had Christmas, you had your birthday. And I likened it to what we had discussed before. It's like when you're planning a wedding, everything is involved around that wedding. And then the wedding's there and then you're on your honeymoon and then you get home and you're like, okay, now what?
I really think you've got something there. Like kids, they find something to look forward to, just like all of us do, right? And they hang on for that. And then when that passes, there's this precipitous drop. But I love the intervention, Wendy. I love what you did because you went to understand what he was going through. So a lot of us are inclined with our kids because we don't want our kids to be in pain of any kind, right? So we're inclined to try to talk them out of it. Oh, everything's great. You get to start a new semester. How fun. You get to see your friends again. But kids aren't necessarily feeling that. So you give him this moment where you relate to him and say, I understand, you know, like this is probably not the toughest, not the easiest time for you. This is difficult.
Do you watch This Is Us?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bill, I know you do. I don't know if you saw it last night, but there's a moment where Jack's friend Miguel was complaining about something, and Jack had these words of wisdom to turn him around and say, well, it's going to be okay. And young teenage Kevin says, you know what, Dad? Sometimes you got to let people feel like crap.
Oh.
And you do. I've noticed that, and I've learned that in your book, The Available Parent. And
right.
By talking to you, you have to validate their feelings and not try to pump them up right away, but go, oh, that sucks.
I hadn't thought of it during the This Is Us episode, but man, Wendy, that is perfect. That's exactly what's happening for a lot of families. That show has such real keen insight into how families work, and it makes us all weep, you know.
Oh, my God. But it's not perfect either. It lets you know that despite, you know, some dysfunction, you can still have a real loving family.
Absolutely. Right. And I think in the end, it has to come down to listening and recognizing, oh, yeah, sometimes things just suck, and I have to be able to abide by that. And I have to live as a parent with the fact that things are not great for my kid. I have to be able to, like, just kind of suck it up and allow them to have that moment and be present for them to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, our kids feel misunderstood, isolated, and disconnected, and that's the last set of issues we want them to suffer in these times.
Because of the advances in social media and technology, being a teenager right now is probably the hardest it's ever been, right?
No doubt. It's so difficult because if you are left out, so a lot of kids feel left out, and you can find something. The most popular kid, if they're looking at Snapchat or Instagram, can find something that they're missing out on. So this FOMO thing is actually a very real thing. It's all but diagnostic because they can always find something that they are not a part of. And even if they're at a party, so kids have said, like, I'm at a party, but I see that my good friends are somewhere else, and they told me they were staying in tonight.
Right.
So whereas a generation ago, we had no idea, right? Yeah. If somebody was blowing us off, yeah, we didn't know.
Right.
Kids know. They are keenly aware today.
That's true. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really difficult. And you get a visual. Like, I somebody presented this to me last week. I listened to this girl, and she said, it's not just that I know, because texting would have shown me that. I could have, like, followed some threads and figured that out. But now I can see it. Sometimes watch it if there's a video attached to it, you know, so I can see everybody having fun without me.
Right.
Yeah.
So where is this going? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? Are kids just going to accept it? Or how will this play out eventually?
I think it gets better in the long run because kids recognize what they're doing to each other and they talk about it,
yeah,
more than they used to.
Yeah.
You know, they're really, really empathic. But sometimes they're just unaware. But once they're made aware that these things happen,
yeah,
they tend to curb the behavior that makes somebody else, you know, feel pain or feel bullied. It's where I think high school assemblies used to be not particularly useful.
Right.
Now, the kids actually pay attention a lot of the times in some,
yeah,
of those.
Is, yes, it improved? Good.
Yeah, that's improved.
Very,
yeah,
and good.
I think they've done a good job in some of the high schools around us out in the western suburbs, at the very least, of getting speakers who can really relate to what kids are going,
yeah,
through, so that they can really present something that resonates instead of finding some expert who's talking kind of in a wooden way about theory,
yeah,
you know, where I think kids tune out of that real fast.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can I read this question real quickly?
Yeah.
'Cause it kind of corresponds with what we're saying. Question, are times harder for kids now, or are the coping mechanisms not as developed as before?
That's a fair question. Kids...
I think they're better coping,
yeah,
you know?
In the end, I think you're right. Yeah, I think kids cope really, really well. I just think the stressors are so much higher. Yeah, I think kids actually work on coping mechanisms and things like that. There's an app called Headspace, which is a meditation app. And I work with kids who, on their own, without prompting, have downloaded this app because they know somehow intuitively, I need to somehow chill out,
mm-hmm,
some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll do this on their own, you know? And I don't think we would have done that if we had apps available, right?
Yeah. No, probably not. Dr. John Duffy's here. If you have any questions or comments for him, 312-981-7200 will get that done. We'll pick this up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is with us, life coach, a clinical psychologist. His book is The Available Parent. You can find him. Where can we find you? Where's your website?
Oh, drjohnduffy.com. Very clever of us. I got a whole team for that.
John, this is beyond sad, but a story came out today that I've been following. It takes place near Canton, Ohio, where six different kids over the last 6 months have all committed suicide in a very, very small town in Ohio.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, that there is some sort of copycat syndrome when it comes to something, even something as morose as this.
Right.
But what exactly is the mindset, and what does a town do when they've got a plague like this?
It's tricky to figure out what the mindset is. So in areas where this happens, people kind of marshal their forces and try to eradicate this idea of a copycat. So obituaries are written in a really kind of cagey way, not being specific about,
yeah,
method, even that something was a suicide. But what we forget these days is word gets around. Kids talk to each other. I'm
right.
dealing with that in a situation right now where kids, that there's a couple of suicides that have happened not far from where I practice. And if a kid is feeling really down and he doesn't feel particularly connected, I won't say supported, because most every kid, you know, I think any parent listening would say, well, my kid's supported. I'm here for them whenever
right.
they need me. But if they don't feel connected and they don't feel heard or understood, and something happens, somebody attempts or commits suicide, there's often this enormous show of support and goodwill for that person. There's yellow ribbons around the trees. There's all sorts of ceremony and ritual that happens around that. And there, I've heard kids say more than once, if that were me, I wonder if anyone would show up.
Yeah.
You know? And so some kids take that idea too far, you know?
Those sweet little souls, though, they're not around to see who shows up.
Exactly.
It's just really heartbreaking.
It is. And it's hard to get that into their minds that, you know, like you're not going to see. And tomorrow could be a very different day than today. So if you just hang in there, you know, and that's one of the things I try to do more than anything else when I work with kids is instill that degree of hope that just says, let's hang on and see what happens, you know, like, you know, because it's more interesting that way.
Right.
And I think we can make this better, and we can almost always make it better.
What happens when something, boy, one of these is earth shattering, but when you have six in a half a year's time. So more times than not is the schools will deploy grief counselors.
Yes.
And what do they do in these situations to let these kids know that we certainly miss and mourn the death of whoever died, but it's got to stop. You can't follow suit.
Right.
What do they do?
So it's tough. Being a grief counselor in situations like this, I've done that before. And your job is multifaceted because the first thing you want to do is just get everybody together, as many people who need to be together in a room, and just tell their story. And quickly, within about 3 or 4 days on the long end, because otherwise kids kind of carry the trauma of the loss around with them, even if they're not suicidal or anything. But you also want to check in with each and every child that you sit down with. And these might be kids, are usually kids you're unfamiliar with. They don't know you, you don't know them, and yet you're trying to convince them, hey, if you feel desperate or hopeless in any way, there is no need to go this far, and you want to let them know what resources are available to them, right? Mm-hmm. So there are school social workers, there are outside therapists, there's your counselor at school, and there are your friends and your family. You know, use these resources, talk to these people, and that's the press in grief counseling is don't sit on your grief.
Right.
Like, you know, experience it. Let yourself go through that whole process. And it's not a nice linear process, even though the Kubler-Ross 5 steps suggests it might be.
Yeah.
It's usually really choppy. And you might go through, you know, 3 weeks where you feel perfectly fine. And then that's when you fall apart.
Right.
So grief counselors want to let kids know, hey, you know, however you experience this is the right way to experience it. But be vocal. Talk to people about what you're going through. You know,
that's even so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so important. Yeah. And sometimes, in this case in Canton, some of these kids didn't know each other. And so sometimes you can be pretty far removed from a situation, but if you're feeling hopeless, you identify with it. So you don't want to exclude any kid who wants to talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, and a very good question here. What if the teen is extremely shy and deals with anxiety disorder, tends to internalize? They're not likely to discuss these issues. Any suggestions?
Yeah, it's so tricky. And so what you want to do, I use this word available a lot, because you cannot force a kid to talk. What you can let them know is, in a really deep, sincere way, if you need to talk to somebody, I am here. And if you see a change in your child's behavior, so this is kind of a shout out to parents, a warning to parents and teachers. If you see a dramatic shift in behavior, if your kid isolates even more, your anxious child, then you pull the parent card and you say, you know what, we're going to talk to somebody, you know, and we're going to give it, you know, 3 sessions, and then we'll evaluate where we are. But it's important to get your child in front of a mental health professional at some point. And in that situation, when you're not sure what's going on in your child's mind, there is no downside and there should be no taboo affiliated with going and talking to a therapist.
Right.
Yeah.
My guess is, as a parent, you could probably expect some opposition if you say to your kid, we've explored other options, but I'm making a judgment call here. We're going to go see somebody. There's going to be a little opposition to that, right?
That's an interesting question, Bill. There is a difference along gender lines, by and large. Teenage girls, typically they're like, okay, you know, really? and they come in and they're open and they talk. There's this resistance among boys almost across the board. You know, I don't think I need this. This is a sign of weakness.
Yep.
Even now, that taboo.
They might be hearing that from their dads, though. There are, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone specifically, but there are a group of fathers who are like, oh, suck it up, you don't need it.
Oh, absolutely. More often than not, I have to agree with you, Wendy, that is
unfortunately.
Something. Unfortunately, right? You know, and so probably a good message to dads right here, right now is, you know, that is not a useful message for your kids right now. You know, especially if your child is a little bit of a black box, like the like our texter is describing, you know, where you're not sure what's going on. There is no downside to saying, let's just go talk to somebody a couple of times. And don't make it the end of the world. Don't make it surgery. It's just sitting down and talking to somebody.
Sometimes we need extra help that we can't find on our own, and let's check it out.
Yeah.
Something as simple as that.
Exactly.
John, you talked about how this situation right now is different across, you know, between guys and girls.
Yeah.
What about the initial thing, the thing we first started talking about a little while ago, which is a child trying to be accepted in today's society who doesn't really play along the lines of social media?
Right.
Is that separate by guys and girls too, or is that not?
Kids are affected by social media in different ways. Yeah. I find that the girls I've worked with are really affected by, like, I don't look as good as a lot of these. They make these comparisons to the people that they follow on Instagram. And sometimes it's like these celebrities who spend, you know, all sorts of time photoshopping and doctoring these pictures to look perfect. And they're like, well, I don't look like that. And, you know, and it's easy to say, well, yeah, nobody does. You know?
They
even
don't,
they don't look like that. But still, they make these comparisons, and it's really hard for them to let go of that. You know, so there's this pull toward perfectionism that sometimes leads to anxiety and maybe an eating disorder or something like that.
Right.
This is happening among boys too, by the way. Like, this is, boys are not immune to that. You know, they're following somebody else, but there is this idea. Almost always with social media, kids seem to find this area in which they don't feel good enough. They don't compare well, you know? And that's why, as parents, we need to be a little more savvy about how social media works and the impact it has on our kids' sense of self-esteem.
Right.
And one final text before we let you go. Dr. Duffy, I feel this is not limited to teens. Adults have the same feeling of being left out of friend events. And it is important to bring that up, too.
It's a brilliant point. I mean, you know, sometimes, like you were saying, kids learn a lot of this behavior and this thinking from their parents. Sometimes this initially comes from mom or dad, where it's like, you know, oh, I see that they are looking at their social media and they feel like they're missing out or they're not good enough. So absolutely, this is not limited to teens. It might be kind of amplified a bit with teens, but I've worked with lots of adults, and we probably all know lots of adults, and we probably felt it ourselves, a moment of like, ooh, I wasn't invited to that, or I don't look like that, or I haven't achieved that thing. And suddenly we're making these upward social comparisons that really don't do us a whole lot of good.
Yeah. Thankfully, the sun's out today, because that helps a little, doesn't
it? Yeah, right? Yeah. That's awesome.
John, thank you.
Thanks,
greatly
guys.
Appreciated. Dr. John Duffy, again, the book is called Available Parent. Listen to him right here on WGN Plus. His podcast is great. His website is drjohnduffy.com. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.